For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly Extra.
Question: what's the size of Luton and causes embarrassment to England? Luton and Montenegro. Today the pod salutes the Podgoritsans, takes a final check at the home nation's dismal group standings, runs the rule over the rest of the qualifiers, salutes Super Mario's penalties, Clinsey's funky t-shirt and Spain, then packs all that international business away for September, because now it's back to the league. And with less than 2 months to go, it's the beginning of the end in a very real sense as Reading visit an Arsenal side that's already put over 1,000 goals past them this season alone. Swansea take on Spurs, Chelsea have two games, Southampton and Man United. United have Chelsea and Sunderland, which is sort of 1.5. We look at all of that. There's post-tweets, World Cup minnows qualifying conundrum solved, 20 years of Totti, and the Derby of Italy into Juventus. All of that in Football Weekly Extra. Hi, everybody. Good old Football Weekly back for another edition. Then there's a lot of new pods out there. A lot of new pods out there on the block. You take part in one or two of them, don't you, James Horncastle?
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of new pretenders gunning for Football Weekly's title.
No, mercenary.
Mercenary, right. We respond by going old school, unleashing Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. Lovely to see you.
Good to see you too.
Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
You haven't left since last week, have you?
No, I've just been asleep under the desk.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Now, what do we want to start with? Is it international football? Is it?
Yeah, why not?
Why not? We've got to clear all this stuff out of the way. So let's begin with Montenegro, England. How about those Falcons, hey?
How about them indeed?
Yeah, come on, Sean.
England played very well the first half. They didn't kick on. I mean, people talk about Hodgson. He's still a mid-table manager for a mid-table team. And when England won that, they should have kicked on. I don't think they really did. And then in the end, they got what they deserved. And I think, you know, Montenegro were full valued for their point.
Right. Some people would suggest they even got more than they deserved. England. Pretty damning result for Hodgson with a team that included six Man United players and, quality all over the place, James.
Yeah, no, I think when Hodgson arrived, we kind of adjusted to this sort of new reality of not expecting much from England. I don't know how we got taken in over the last, six months of his tenure into believing again in this England team. Because I seem to remember when we drew against Ukraine at Wembley, that was seen as we've already made things difficult for ourselves. So I don't know particularly why this draw in Montenegro is so sort of unexpected as well.
Oh.
Because I think a lot of people thought that had given quite a great billing to this Montenegro team. They'd obviously been unbeaten in Podgorica. They had drawn twice against England under Capello, got two very good players in Vucinic and Jovetic, and it was a surprise that England performed that in that first half so well.
I mean, what's worth saying as well is that England are probably the third easiest group of all the qualifiers. I mean, you look at kind of Germany, if Gustav got Sweden and Ireland, you know, Scotland and Wales have got Belgium, Croatia, Serbia. I mean, even Italy have got Bulgaria and sort of Czech Republic, Spain and France. England really, you know, aren't up against a great deal and they're still struggling.
No, indeed. Do you want to hear a good stat about the home nations?
Go on.
All right, home nations, so England, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales, right? So far in this campaign, they've had 23 qualifying matches. In those 23 qualifying matches, how many wins? Five. Two of those victories have come against each other, Wales beating Scotland. So take those out. You're left with three, of which the best result from these 23 qualifying games from the home nations is England beating Moldova, who are ranked 103rd in the world. How has it come to this, Barry Glendinning?
England just aren't very good, I think, and they haven't been for quite some time. Roy Hodgson seems to be a very nice man who has forgotten more about football than I will ever know, I'd imagine. But he got his tactics very badly wrong against Montenegro. He was slow to react when they came out all guns blazing in the second half, and was outwitted by his opposite number. And, it was a poor performance by England, but I don't think the result is particularly the catastrophe people are making out. Their destiny is still very much in their own hands, and they still have three home games left to qualify. Hmm. But on the evidence of what we've seen in this group, where they've only beaten Moldova and San Marino, even if they qualify for the World Cup, they have not got a hope in hell of winning it, or even getting to the semi-final.
I think no one would disagree with that, but I mean, let's be honest, if England go to the World Cup, there's every chance that Barry and I can head out to Rio and head out. I don't think Barry normally would particularly support England, but I think the thought of going to be on Rio in the Copacabana in about a year and a bit's time, I think he'll be cheering on England.
What sort of carrot are you dangling in front of Barry there, Sean? Are you suggesting that were England to qualify, that basically the Guardian's presence in Rio will be absolutely massive?
You would hope that we would certainly send more journalists. I mean, that's sort of a given, really.
And Barry, what about him?
Well, I mean, I'm sure Barry will be, you know, out there doing his bit.
All right. Here's another great stat. This one courtesy of producer Ben. Who's the first European nation to fail to qualify for Brazil 2014? Just bear in mind the Faroe Islands, Liechtenstein, San Marino and Andorra can mathematically still make it.
Wait, Scotland.
Scotland. Scotland are the first. Epic fail. Epic fail. All right, that's enough Home Nations International stuff, I'm thinking. No? Anything else you want to throw in there, Barry?
Well, all the Home Nations did badly, but yep. The results, like England's, weren't particularly catastrophic for any of them. Scotland were never going to qualify. Wales aren't going to qualify. Right. The Republic of Ireland's chances of qualifying haven't really been dented. They're still not quite slim, even though they drew against Austria. So, we'll chalk it down to a communal bad day at the office and wait for September.
Right. Okay, good. More international stuff, just to round off one or two things. We were talking about whether you should have pre-qualifiers for, you know, the minnows. Ilmatic says the only nations in the European region who have no chance of beating anyone are Andorra and San Marino. So it's not really worth changing the system for those two. But here's Roger B, who I think by night goes as Ben from Southampton, who says, why not just give the existing European section one extra group, a Group J, and stick the six lowest FIFA-ranked teams in that? That would give those teams a chance to improve incrementally without any significant impact on the rest of Europe by winning matches amongst themselves. That's nice,
but
isn't
would
it?
They then qualify for a major tournament?
Yeah.
But that's the equivalent of being on the singles table at a wedding reception,
yeah,
or eating with the children at some family dinner, you know.
Yeah, I remember that. That was horrible. But they kind of do that already, and it's called Group E, which currently has Switzerland, Iceland, Albania, Norway, Cyprus and Slovenia, all of whom could still mathematically qualify. Switzerland currently edging it just in front of Iceland and Albania. How about that? Other international talking points anyway. Holland 100% still. Well done to them. Russia too, although they didn't play. They played Brazil 1-1. Oh, Italy. 2-0 win over Malta. Buffon saved a penalty. Balotelli scored one. That's now how many in a row he's scored?
15.
15.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think in terms of infallibility,
yeah,
I think it's got 15 out of 15.
Yeah.
I think the next one is Van Basten, who had a streak of 26.
Ooh.
And then missed against Parma. But Ricky Lambert, I think, is still... I think he's on 31, is he?
Is he?
Without a miss, yeah.
Super Ricky Lambert. Did you know that Italy haven't lost a qualifying game for the World Cup or European Championship since 2006?
Spain haven't lost a World Cup qualifier since 1993, I don't
You're
think.
You're joking.
Yeah.
Wow. USA drew in Mexico. Eli Carrico says the point was great at the Azteca. Klinsmann's T-shirt was the real highlight. It was very... A lovely affair, very fashionable. It's kind of dark blue with the kind of, you know, that shield thing US soccer has with the, it was very nice in the middle, like that. Suarez hit somebody, or maybe not, allegedly hit somebody. Barry, the latest on that?
Well, he did. He punched someone in the face.
Gonzalo Jara.
Yes. Yep. And some Liverpool fans seem to think that the attention that's been drawn to this assault. And, you know, it was a bit of a dig. He was being held at a corner and he'd had a frank exchange of views with the same player moments previously. And he was trying to sort of wriggle free of him, so he punched him in the face. Mm. It wasn't, you know, a killer right hook or anything. A couple of Liverpool fans yesterday were complaining that the attention being drawn to this by various English media outlets was a deliberate ploy to ensure that a British player... Gareth Bale presumably gets the Player of the Year award rather than Suarez.
Right. Very interesting, Barry. The other midweek news, of course, the fact that huge crunch game at the Stade de France, Spain won 1-0 at France and Pedro the scorer. It's Sid Lowe time o'clock. Sid!
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well. Where are you?
I am just walking up to the back of the stand at Valdebebas, where Real Oviedo are playing this weekend's game, which will be moved forward to Thursday because, of course, it's Semana Santa.
Of course it is.
And it's 0-0. I'm just we're all in a little bit late because there's a problem with the tickets, but it's 0-0, 3 minutes gone.
Well, they're already playing.
Yeah.
Is it a national holiday there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Semana Santa is pretty much holiday all the way through.
Yeah. The year is pretty much holiday all the way through. Yeah.
Is this the time of year when everybody in Seville dresses up as a clan wizard and marches through the street?
That's certainly one way of looking at it, yeah. I've learned not to look at it that way because Spaniards tend not to take to it too well when you say that. But yeah, that's certainly one way of looking at it.
Right, that is an organisation with a terrible history of racist abuse and oppression and all sorts of nonsense.
The clan.
And also the clan, but fish, yes.
Yeah. Right, anyway.
That was too easy, Jimbo. That was far too easy, that one.
Yeah. Now, Sid, how about that game at the Stade de France then?
Yeah, it was pretty good, wasn't it? It wasn't perhaps as fluid as Spain has sometimes been, but I thought they were very, very competitive. I thought Xabi Alonso in particular was really, really important to him in the first half when France was starting to pressure. He was the guy kind of overcoming that first line of pressure almost all the time. And I thought, all in all, Spain deserved it. Although, of course, that doesn't change the fact that after the game, there are two players that people are talking about more than anyone else. One, inevitably, is Pedro, and the other is Victor Valdés, who made a couple of really good saves.
So do you think he might be edging Casillas now for the number one spot?
No, I don't think that'll happen, although it's kind of interesting that we may get to the end of the season and Casillas, who was, you know, club captain, Spain captain, the big star, the man everyone called Saint Iker, and suddenly he's a substitute both for club and country. But I don't think that will last because of his symbolism, because of his status as captain. Vicente Luasque had already said, in fact, that even if Real Madrid didn't play him between now and the end of the season, and there I think that's a genuine possibility that he won't play again for Real Madrid this season. If Real Madrid don't play him, Luasque said he would still go to the Confederations Cup. The assumption being as number one, although who knows, it could well be as a substitute, but no, I think he'll get his place back.
All right, Sid, Barcelona, who are they playing with their defensive crisis? Jordi Alba out.
Yeah, well, defensive Jordi Alba to add to Puyol, and they've got real problems for the Champions League. Not so much for this weekend. This weekend, I think it's Celta they play.
All right, okay, and the other problem for them in the Champions League is the fact that Ibrahimovic will be playing. Will be playing. Is that his band reduced?
That'll be that UNICEF, won't it?
Yeah, it certainly will. So anyway, are the Spanish papers, are they scared, Ibra?
I don't know if they're scared so much as bear in mind that newspapers look at it from a story point of view. So I mean, it's quite exciting. It makes it more interesting. Although perhaps it would have been more impact if the one and only time he played against Barcelona was actually at the Camp Nou. But certainly he's someone that does worry them, because I think there's a recognition that despite the fact that things didn't exactly go the way they would have liked them to have gone when he was here, there's a recognition that he's a bloody good player.
Yeah, indeed. So all right, well, we'll talk more about that on Monday. Hopefully, enjoy the second half. It sounds unseasonably mild where you are there, Sid. Is it quite warm?
It's blustery, but yeah, it's quite a nice day today.
Oh, lovely. Little hint of Mediterranean sunshine to brighten up our lives.
Well,
thanks.
Mediterranean. To be fair, though, Madrid's quite a long way from the Mediterranean.
Yeah, but
what will it be? The nearest coast to Madrid will be what, 420 kilometres, something like that.
Right. It might actually be the Asturian coast, actually, rather than
which is of course not Mediterranean.
Yeah, it's Atlantic.
This
right.
is very Partridge.
Thanks.
Well, is East Anglia on the Mediterranean?
No. Anyway, now Sid, you enjoy the game. We'll speak to you on Monday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thanks, Sid. Well, how about that then? Premier League back this weekend. 8 or sometimes 9 games to go for the teams that are struggling away, the top, the bottom, the middle. Sean, where's my 25 grand coming from this weekend?
I don't know. It's quite an interesting week. I'm particularly looking at the relegation games. Ooh. I think that's where we could see some change. There's been a lot of money for Sunderland to go down. They were sort of 6-1 a week or so ago, but with Lee Catamol ruled out for the season, with Fletcher ruled out for the season as well, suddenly people are wondering whether Sunderland could be the team that plummets down into
the championship. They've been wondering that for some time, but now top goal scorer, their only goal scorer pretty much, is out. Sessegnon's in doubt for this weekend as well, I believe. And Lee Catamol, the beating heart of this Sunderland team, ripped out like that, like the end of that film with Mickey Rourke. And that's extraordinary.
Angel Heart.
Yeah, that's the one. Barry, what have you got to say?
Stephen Fletcher, our goal scorer who doesn't score very often or hasn't scored much recently, is gone. So, yeah, they'll be relying on Conor Wickham and Agent Graham, the Newcastle supporter, Danny Graham, who's been performing excellently for Newcastle since signing for Sunderland by not scoring a single goal. He's not a prolific goal scorer. He never has been, to the best of my knowledge. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what I mean. I certainly wouldn't put anyone off taking those juicy odds of 3-1 on Sunderland to go down.
Right.
It's difficult to see where their next point is coming from. They're four very difficult games coming up, and then I think against United, Chelsea, Newcastle and Everton.
And Tottenham as well.
Then they have a game against Villa, so that, that could conceivably... I mean, people are saying they'll get no points at all from their next four games. They'll probably get one, possibly three.
The only hope, perhaps, might be the fact that United are coming into a double-header weekend, if you will. First this game and then Stamford Bridge on Monday in the FA Cup semi-final.
Well, the suggestion is that Fergie will name a completely different side for both games, but even if they did name a quote-unquote reserve side, it's still incredibly strong. It's still looking at the likes of, you know, probably Hernandez and Welbeck up front, you know, Giggs in the midfield. I mean, it's still a, you know, a stronger side than Sunderland, I'd argue, even their B team.
Well, we mentioned that six Man United players featured for England, so they had two international games in the past week or so. So, yeah, interesting, that one. Interesting.
Van Persie, I think, snapped his goal drought. I think he'd gone six games without a goal, and he scored three whilst away on... in international duty, so I think he'd had quite a lean start to 2013, so they'll be hoping that he'll be...
I think he had one goal in 11 or something like that for club and country, so yeah, that's a huge return to form. And what about their chances at Stamford Bridge in the FA Cup semi-final?
Well, you never really know what you're going to get from Chelsea, I don't think, under Rafa. He seems to have restrained them quite a lot. I always find them quite methodical, quite plodding. They were, you know, off the leash when they were under Di Matteo, too much so. I don't know. I think with United, yeah, they're always very good when it comes to this time of year, the run in. And I think being out of the Champions League, you know, this will be their focus, you know, given they're running away with the league, I guess. So something that they can. And obviously, when they play Sunderland, it'll be a reminder of going to the stadium like the final day of last season, when obviously they thought they'd won the league and City won it in added time. So, yeah, I think they'll want to win that. But yeah, I think the FA Cup will, having a double of a season will be still a success for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, you fancy United to go through?
Don't know about that. I think it's a really tough game. I'd make maybe even Chelsea marginal favourites. I think it's a really tough one to call.
All right, okay. Well, of course, Chelsea do have to take their Premier League game on Saturday ever so seriously because they're down at Southampton. Southampton had a 2-2 draw at the Bridge. Of course, Chelsea are involved in that battle for top four places. They're now in third, a point ahead, I think, of Spurs, and then Arsenal some way further behind. But four games in 8 days, Southampton, then Man United in the Cup, then on Thursday, Ruben Kazan in the Europa League, and then they're at Sunderland next Sunday. It's going to test Rafa's managerial ability to the utmost.
Well, I guess with Southampton, they took quite a pasting from Chelsea in, was it
FA Cup?
FA Cup
5-1.
But recently they've been really good at home. They beat City at home. They beat Liverpool at home. So I would say that, yeah, maybe they might have learnt something from their previous pastings at Chelsea. But
right,
I think they'd be quite good.
I was at the Southampton-Liverpool game, and if they play as well as they did in that game, which is unlikely because I don't think many teams would be able to play that well twice in a row, they would be a match for anyone in the Premier League. Mm. They were absolutely outstanding. Admittedly, Liverpool were shocking, really, really poor, but even so, if Southampton reach anywhere near those heights again, I'd very much fancy them to beat Chelsea.
Interesting. Very interesting, and thus a very dangerous weekend, this for Rafa's Blues. They could see their FA Cup chances end, and they could also take a big knock to their top four chances. Yeah,
it's an interesting weekend of fixtures. I'm just looking at, there seemed quite a few matches where big-ish teams could get turned over. You know, you look at Swansea, Spurs.
Let's look at Swansea, Spurs.
Okay.
All right.
Well, Swansea don't lose much at home. They've only lost three
odd
seasons.
They lost to Arsenal there last time, didn't they?
Yeah, and they're entertaining Arsenal's neighbours now. The Spurs have lost their last two games in the league. They've also lost their game against Inter, the away leg, even though they went through. So they need to sort of stop this run of defeats. And Swansea, on their day, are capable of beating anyone, as they've shown. So, you know, it's a hard one to call. Like many of this weekend's games, it's a very hard one to call.
Right. Dawson and Lennon both had injury troubles during the international break. Both meant to be back now, are they, Sean?
We'll find out today. There's press conference today. So
oh, that's huge, idea. Isn't it?
It is.
For Spurs, no?
It is. I'm slightly annoyed with that papers for sort of having the kind of Spurs in crisis or Spurs in one man team after these defeats. They lost three games in a row, I think, in October, and the sort of same thing come up. This happens in football. You know, sometimes teams go on good runs, sometimes teams go on bad runs. I still think Spurs are a strong side. Typically, teams that win the Carling Cup tend to have, certainly when they're not the big sides, you look at Birmingham as well, they kind of ended up getting dropped down. Typically, they do tend to then sort of not take it easy, but there's that mental readjustment. Yeah. It hasn't happened yet with Swansea, particularly, but it wouldn't surprise me if from now to the end of the season they didn't perhaps pick up as many points as they have been.
Effectively, their season is over, no? They're way clear of the relegation battle. They've picked up some silverware, allowed to have signed a new deal. So, yeah, motivation-wise, that must be difficult. Speaking of season being over, it could well be for either Reading and Arsenal in an absolutely huge clash at the Emirates on Saturday. Wow. Arsenal 4 points behind Spurs, but this looks like an easy place for them to pick up three big points, no?
It should be. I mean, Reading are bottom of the table. They've got a new manager in, but I would be amazed if Reading survived or indeed got anything from Saturday's game. I think they're the worst side in the league.
All right, you've seen these two in action before.
I have, yeah. I was interested. I was chatting to a football analyst from a Championship club last week, and he was saying that, you know, last season when his club played Reading, he said they did 4-4-2 so well. He said his manager would come to him and say, well, what are their weaknesses, you know, playing this? And for a Championship side, he said, you know, there weren't any. They did what they did very, very effectively. But moving up to the Premier League, not really bringing any many new players, they played exactly the same way. And of course, Premier League sides, better players, facing a kind of fairly typical formation, just were able to kind of basically generally beat them. And I can't see Atkins in the short space of time he has doing anything other than sort of seal them down into the Championship.
Right, Nigel Atkins has come in then over the international break to take over at Reading.
Yeah, and I think most Reading fans have kind of resigned to relegation, and if he should manage to keep them up, it would be a huge bonus and an unexpected bonus. But it's really exciting time to be a Reading fan because he's a real breath of fresh air to have around your club. He quotes Abraham Lincoln and Rocky Balboa in his programme notes. He gives interviews and recites poems in post-match interviews on television shows, which I believe you possibly might have hosted.
No, I didn't see that. No, the guy in the glass you're referring to.
Yes, by Dale Wimbrow.
It's kind of like a late Victorian Man in the Mirror. You know, just if you haven't read it, that's the kind of thing.
That's Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Ben.
Yeah, it also features the word pelf.
Yeah, I'm curious about that myself.
It means wealth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I researched it. When you get what you want in your struggle for pelf,
yeah,
and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say.
Yep.
For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fella whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back from the glass.
Right, and it goes on?
Do you want to hear it all?
I say.
Do you want to hear it all?
Let's have the rest of it at the end as a special bonus track. Okay.
Bonus is
we'll
one
file that along with Fernando Duarte's Argentina joke.
But one of Adkins' previous players has described him as a kind of the human equivalent of a horse whisperer. Ooh. And apparently he's a great man motivator.
And my hand's up. The horse whisperer was always a human. It's the horse that's the horse. The whisperer is the human.
Yeah, I see what you mean there. Sorry, he's what I meant is, while he can't...
He's a human whisperer.
...motivate horses, he can motivate
humans.
I see
your point. It's myself that misunderstood. Sorry.
No, well, you're okay. Technically correct, if you want to be pedantic about it. But he apparently learned the best way to motivate players during his years as a physiotherapist with Scunthorpe. He worked as physio there for 10 years before taking over from Brian Laws.
Right.
And, I'd love to have him in charge of a club I supported. And he seems to be a really, really nice bloke.
No, excellent. Didn't you have a poetry gag?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was thinking that, you know, if he's reciting poetry after you know, if it was the guy in the glass when he was at Southampton. Now, on Saturday, it could be the ballad of Get Reading Out of Jail by Oscar Wilde.
Nice poetry gag there. Stony silence from the rest of us. We don't have any poetry gags, Barry. We'll move on. Ooh, big running for Southampton.
You could have said Stony Grey Silence by Patrick Kavanagh.
Oh, look at him. Crikey. Nigel Atkins, big run in for Reading. He's got Southampton after this game.
Yeah, well, he has previous, I think, in taking over clubs. If everything goes to plan, he'd get beaten by Arsenal and then win three in a row.
Oh, well, it's Arsenal, then Southampton, then Liverpool at home, Norwich away, QPR at home, Fulham away, Man City at home, and then West Ham away. So,
quite a lot of those games sound winnable.
Well, I guess.
Whether they're either playing bad
Reading
teams.
Reading have lost their past six in all competitions, Barry. Past six, all defeats.
Look, I'm not saying they're going to stay up, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
All right, what about Arsenal? If they were to drop points here, is that their top four challenge kiboshed?
Not necessarily, but clearly it would hurt them. I mean, you've still got Chelsea and Spurs to have some.
But
tough
a weekend
games.
Like this, when Chelsea have got this massive issue of not only Southampton but also Man United coming up, and Spurs have got that tricky trip to Swansea. This is, you know, they've got to pick up the points here against Reading, huh?
Yeah, of course, but at the same time, if they were to lose to Reading and win the next six, seven games without Sam Pedantic...
We haven't mentioned their precedence here, which we really, really should do. Arsenal's results this season, let's just go over them one more time. In the Cup, the game you covered, I think, on Minute by Minutes, was 7-5 to Arsenal, and they put another 5 past them at the Medici Stadium in the league as well. 5-2 the victory there.
Absolutely, probably 0-0 on that.
Ooh. Right, Sean. Well, plenty more still to come. You've got loads of notes today, Barry, haven't you?
Well, I'd just like to do a bit of prep.
Yeah, have you got any tidbits that you're saving up for part three you can give us a sneak preview of?
Well, if I was going to have a bet this weekend, yep. I would go for the all-West derby, West right. Ham, West Brom, to be a draw.
We'll hear why after this. Trick your newfangled podcast need to pick up on a little of a teaser there on side of the either side of the
emphatic stuff,
right? Okay, the West game, come on then.
West Brom generally don't do very well in London,
right?
They've only won one of their last 13 visits to the Big Smoke, and West Ham just aren't very good.
All right then, scientific stuff.
Oh, but the thing, West Ham could have Joe Cole, Mark Noble and Kevin Nolan back, so obviously their fitness could have a huge bearing, or lack of fitness could have a huge bearing on this match.
What about Kevin Davis?
What about him?
Well, that shock story about Bolton not renewing his contract.
Well, it's not a shock story, because I've known about it for months.
Are you still very much into me with the Davies?
I am in the Davi inner circle.
Are you?
No, not really.
All right.
But I was aware that he wasn't, almost certainly wasn't going to get a contract renewed. Right. But
this is at Bolton, listeners.
He was quite unlucky, because apparently his contract expires about 2 weeks shy of him, or 5 days, is it, of him being
entitled
to a
testimonial. But the club has said that's all a storm on a teacup. They're going to give him a testimonial if he asks for one.
Well, he deserves one, because he's been a very loyal servant. And I suspect that his Kids of Bolton charity will do very, very well out of that testimonial.
Lovely.
I think it's, on the surface, West Brom traveling to West Ham doesn't sound particularly exciting. However, if West Ham were to lose, I think suddenly they could see themselves plunge into a relegation dogfight. Particularly if Wigan were to beat Norwich, because suddenly the gap would only be 3 points between Wigan and West Ham. Wigan have a game in hand. If you look at West Ham, they've only got 10 points from the last 11 games. Mm-hmm. After West Brom, they then got Liverpool and Southampton away and Man United at home. So, I mean, at the moment, West Ham are 20-1 to go down. I'm not saying they will go down. They almost certainly won't. But if they were to lose to West Brom on Saturday, suddenly they might get the heebie-jeebies.
That's very interesting. They and Newcastle both look like they were more or less safe, but they're not out of it yet.
Not completely. I mean, I think it all depends on whether Wigan can push themselves up. And Wigan, of course, they've got Norwich at home on this Saturday, and then they've got QPR the following week. And if they were to win both those games, suddenly it becomes very, very tight for that third place spot to go down.
Well,
it's one of those games where a point would do both sides absolutely fine.
Which one is this? West Brom, West Ham?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think... it'll be a low-scoring draw. 0-0, 1-1.
Wigan-Norwich, meantime. That's who we're going to play this weekend, Norwich. And Norwich got one or two problems. Ruddy potentially still out. Mark Bunn's out.
Absolutely.
On Easter weekend, no hot crosses for Bunn, don't think.
He got sent off for being a hot cross bun.
Yeah. Indeed so.
I mean, obviously Norwich haven't played particularly well since the start of the year and haven't picked up that many points. But it's worth pointing out, they've still got Swansea, Reading, West Brom and Villa at home. So you would expect them to be just about all right.
All right. Fulham QPR, talking about the relegation battle. QPR, last time they went to Craven Cottage, you know what the score was? 6-0. Six big goals to nil. Big goals. And Fulham are on a bit of a roll at the moment. They've only lost one of their past five matches at home, and that was 1-0 to Man United. So, don't know, eh? Because QPR had that mini revival, but then they lost at Villa. And what do you think now? What do you think about this one, James?
Oh, I don't know. I agree with you. I think Fulham were rotten towards the end of 2012, and they've. I think with United, they're one of the form teams in 2013. I don't know. I've given up. There was a time when a few weeks ago I thought, yeah, QPR can do this. Now I don't. I think it's too late. I know it was late for Harry when he was at Portsmouth and he managed to revive them. But I just can't see it at all.
Can you see it, Barry?
No.
Sean?
I very much expect not.
Okay. Aston Villa, Liverpool? Do you know Aston Villa won at Anfield, didn't they? 3-1 in December, famously. And they've just had back-to-back league wins going into the international break against Reading and fellow battlers QPR. Liverpool, who had a good run, then lost at Southampton just before the break, the game you were talking about, Barry. What do you think?
It's a really difficult outcome to predict because both teams are so Jekyll and Hyde. Mm. There's no doubt in my mind, if Villa play like they did against QPR and Liverpool play like they did against Southampton, then I would suggest Villa would win and win comfortably, but it's difficult to imagine Liverpool playing that badly again. It's difficult to imagine Villa scoring, you know, two or more goals in two successive matches. So, you know, it's a coin toss for me.
Coin toss. All right.
That'd be quite interesting.
Toss a coin.
Go on.
Yeah.
What happens if the draw, though? Pardon? If it lands on its side, you're going to give it...
Why are you doing that, James? What's your point?
No, I was just going to point out that Benteke has been excellent since the turn of the year. I think either he or Suarez is the top goal scorer in the Premier League in the new year.
So, yeah. I bet he's off to Italy, isn't he, Benteke?
No, I'm not reading too much into that.
Are you not? Okay. Villa are going to win that one.
Yeah.
Excellent. And do you want to toss it for Newcastle, Man City? Or it's not really necessary, is it? Probably. Not really necessary. Newcastle,
what do you think?
They're both thinking about the Cups, these two, no? Man City, FA Cup, Newcastle, Europa League. Is that too simplistic a reading, do you think?
Well, Newcastle, Mancini's got Newcastle's number, so to speak. I think he's never lost to them since since he's been at City. I think he's only drawn against them once. He's won the rest.
So I was going to say, is there much talk in Italy about Mancini's future?
Well, there was a report in Gazzetta a couple of days ago, which was again rekindling this sort of Monaco being interested in offering him $8 million a year, a budget of what $200 million, which I think the papers in England have now picked up on. But it's obviously
the rumour mill picked up on it this morning.
Summer.
There you go. Well done, rumour.
What would you do, Jimbo, if you were say offered one of if one of James's podcast came in for you and said, look, we're going to give you shed loads of money, but you're going to have, you know, a quarter of the listeners. Would you go for it?
No, of course I wouldn't. It's not about the money for me, Sean. It's all about this. You, me, giving something back.
Kissing the Guardian badge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Why? Has there been any? But anyway, there's all sorts of questions about Monaco and their financial clout in the future because they might be forced to obey the same financial restrictions, the same fiscal regime that the rest of Ligue 1 enjoys, as opposed to being, you know, if they're going to compete in the French League, they have to pay taxes like the rest of the French leagues, supposedly.
Mm. It'd be quite harsh on Ranieri as well because they're top of Ligue 2 at the moment and look likely to be promoted. So, you know, for one of those situations to be, you know, the guy who takes them back and then is immediately removed from the job, it would be harsh, I think, particularly for... I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, Mancini's... I think Mancini is an upgrade on Ranieri, but still, I think it's not particularly fair if that were to be the
case.
Quite
ironic, the Monaco manager being Ranieri, when you think of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, because the royal family are called Ranieri.
All right.
Right, let's have some posts, because that's more than enough of that. Can't think of a good name, says, is the new Norwich striker's name the best example of nominative determinism? Ricky Van Wolfswinkle is apparently the dog's bollocks. Grun says, ooh, Fernando Duarte, you completely dropped the ball on the Seedorf story.
One of several balls. No,
Fernando had said that basically Seedorf was time wasting after being subbed. He went off slowly, picked up a yellow card, and then picked up a second one. But basically, apparently, Seedorf wasn't the one being subbed. The referee misunderstood and told him to get off the field. He wasn't leaving the field quickly enough. Seedorf told him, "I'm not the one being subbed." So he got a yellow card for that. So at this point, Seedorf said, "Well, if it's so important to you that I go off the field, I'll go." And then went and picked up a second yellow card for doing it slowly. So apparently, absolutely farcical, says Fernando. Grun. Right. Philippa B says, re the snowiest match ever, which we were talking about, the USA-Costa Rica, which they're not going to repeat. We mentioned that, I think. St. Etienne Montpellier in with a shout. Basically, the players themselves had to clear the snow at halftime because they didn't want the game to be replayed. While the manager, Gaultier, amused himself throwing snowballs. If Montpellier hadn't worn bright orange shorts, they'd have entirely disappeared. That would have been a great tactic. Coventry. What's the latest on Coventry?
Apparently they've agreed some sort of deal, the details of which I'm not particularly au fait with, to play their remaining games in the Ricoh Arena this season. Yeah.
And the points penalty?
I don't know.
It's not been confirmed yet. Okay. Right. Now, almost at the end of today's show, almost at Barry's Poetry Corner, but not before we throw forward to the big game this weekend in Italy. Wow, Inter-Juventus, the derby of Italy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a big game in terms of the rivalry, but we go back to November. Inter beat Juventus at the Juventus Stadium. They're the first team ever to do that. They ended Juventus's run at 49 matches. And at that point, it looked as though Inter were going to be contenders for the title. They were going to be the ones who ran Juventus closest. But unfortunately, that was the high point of their season. It's been more or less downhill ever since. Mm. I think they're 18 points behind Juventus. It looks quite improbable that they will qualify for the Champions League, which is...
Well, they're 7 points away from the top three.
So. Exactly. So I mean, in that respect, it is the cliched must-win game for them. Mm. But, yeah, I think in terms of players coming back from international duty, they've obviously got a lot of South Americans. And there was a story that about some of the Uruguay players weren't their plane was cancelled, so they might be late back. So, like, Pereira, for example. I've got Guarin coming back, Palacio, so it'll be...
They're not currently eating each other on the Andes, are they, after a terrible crash?
Alive.
Mm.
Seen that, yeah.
No, I've never seen that film, but...
And they, like, hollow out people's legs and wear them as shoes. They do that as well, to tread across the Andes. Don't know.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Oh, okay, that puts into you their perspective, isn't it?
Weren't several Argentinian players... reduced to taking oxygen.
That's true. Leo Messi vomited in the halftime in break, I believe. Or was it in the second half?
Was it Bolivia or Ecuador that were playing?
They were in Bolivia. In La Paz.
Hmm. Messi was given a poncho as well.
Was he? Hmm. That's nice. Good. Okay. It was
not after he was sick.
Right. Was he given a poncho from Suarez?
Could have been.
Yeah.
What's been your favourite derby of Italy? I mean, I've only been to one, the 2002 game in Inter, which was 2-2, and I went with Sid Lowe, and it was a good game, but I'm trying to think of...
There was a cracking Inter win against Juve at the San Siro, where with Toto Scalacci scoring a great goal, but that was way back. I don't know. It's not a game that necessarily I hold close to my heart, although the last one, the 3-1 back in, when was it, November?
Yeah,
that was
excellent.
A rip-roaring game. Big game, a big week this for Juve, because they've got Bayern Munich, of course, coming up next week. Bayern Munich.
Yeah, and I guess Juve going into this this game, Italy obviously quite dependent on Juve. The Prandelli's sort of talked about composing a team with blocks of two teams.
Yeah.
So you saw them play against Malta, which I think had 6 Juve players and 5 Milan players, which is quite rare. I think it's only ever happened twice. But they were talking about whether that would lead to some kind of tiredness, some kind of impact on Juve. But to be fair, Malta were a bit of a pushover. It was the kind of game that Conte would probably like going into that.
Mm.
But yeah, I think they're heavy favourites to beat Inter, because I mean the thing is, Inter's game before the international break was cancelled because of the weather, wasn't it?
The Sampdoria one.
And one of the defenders, Juan Jesus, was meant to be serving suspension for that. He'll be banned for the Juve game now. But Samuel will be back, which is important. So
cool. All right. Well, the other big story we want to mention, front page of today's Gazetta. Barry.
Tutto Totti.
That's right. 20 years of Roma football and all Totti. Today, Thursday, marks the 20th anniversary of a young man called Francesco taking the field for the first time for the Giallorossi. Is it the 20th anniversary of him in Serie A or just in general?
That was his debut against Brescia in Serie A.
Wow.
So, yeah.
At 16, no?
Yeah.
Carlo Mazzoni, manager?
No, it was Boskov.
Oh, it was Boskov. Vucin Boskov.
Yeah, so...
Blimey.
He was talking in that interview in Gazzetta today about had he been a centre forward started out as a centre forward rather than as a number 10, he would have easily have scored over at least 300 goals. Rather than, he's obviously 49 away from being the all time Serie A top scorer at the moment, that's his sort of fixation at the moment is to try and overcome that before he retires.
Right.
And there's been a lot of talk over the last 2 weeks about maybe Totti coming out of international retirement and playing for Italy, going to the World Cup in Brazil, because obviously he's always had quite a mixed relationship with the national team, and people always questioning whether Roma comes first for him. I think he goes on to say, it's always his fault if Italy don't perform, and that was one of the reasons why he sort of walked away. He just doesn't really want that to happen again, although. Right. He's leaving that door open.
He rates Lippi, who was his manager, of course, in Germany, as his top manager ever, his favourite manager, which is a bit of a slap in the face for Zdenek Zeman, Zdenek Zeman, legendary figure, of course, and the most tacit man in football anywhere, I think. Famous for his kind of 60-second pauses while he waits to give you a one-word answer to your question. They actually get an editorial from him on the front page. He says... Totti is football. That's it. That's all. There's nothing else to say. They asked me for 30 lines, but it's enough. 4 words. Totti is football. Thanks, Danny.
Isn't that three words?
Totti is... but in Italian, it's the football. Il calcio. Totti è il calcio. So, correctly translated in English, it would be about 6 words. Totti is the game of football. Right. Which is a bit of a surprise, because I thought Pippo Inzaghi was the game of football.
Yeah, Pippo played a derby, didn't he, against his brother Simone.
They're
both
that's true.
Coaches of Milan's youth team and Lazio's youth team.
Yeah.
Simone won.
Simone won, eh? Who'd have thought Simone Inzaghi would have ended up a manager?
He never kicked on, did he, Simone Inzaghi? I remember watching him for Lazio, 2001, and amidst all these great players and, the Nedveds and the Verons in the world, he often played, and then he sort of just completely tailed away, didn't he?
He had a disastrous penalty chip attempt that I think effectively killed his career.
But he's one of the few players, I think, to score 4 goals in a Champions League game.
A Champions League preliminary, though.
Was it a preliminary?
Yeah, it was against, Bratislav Sloribor or something like that.
It all counts.
What's the name of that team? Bratislav thing? I did just make that name. What is it? It was against Bratislav. Something like that.
So now you're pouring scorn on minnows that are actually pre-qualifying for qualification. Yeah.
Why? Am I being...
Your arrogance is... I don't like it. I don't care for it one bit.
All right then, Barry. Let's hear some poetry to play us out.
Can you look in the mirror?
I don't know.
I like the guy.
Depends how high on the wall it is. Yeah. Anyway, that's it for today's podcast. There'll be a paper review with more top Totti tidbits in the paper review, which will be up as usual on Friday morning. Do join me for that. Otherwise, we'll be back on Monday looking back on what promises to be. That was extraordinary, but slightly hard to predict. Weekend of football. Barry, thank you very much for joining us. Shawnee Ingle, James R. Horncastle, and producer Ben. And have a super weekend, everybody. Oh, and happy Easter! Barry the Poetry. Right.
The Guy in the Glass by Dale Winbrow. When you get what you want in your struggle for pelf, and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself, and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife, whose judgment upon you must pass. The fella whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back from the glass. He's the feller to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end. And you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test, if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may, like Jack Horner, and chisel a plum, and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years, and get pats on the back as you pass. But your final reward will be heartache and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. Listen to your little inner Jimbo. I think that's the message.